So, like we said at the beginning, we do have a speaker tonight who's going to share their experience, strength, and hope with us for 45 minutes. And I'm actually going to ask Christine if she'd be kind enough to introduce them. So, Christine, over to you.
I'm Christina Menardic. Sorry about that. My mic was muted and I'm chatting away. Anyway, John came into our meetings, I don't know, it's probably a couple of years ago. I'm not sure if it was during the pandemic or not, but he came into our meetings and he stayed. He's been clean for a while. He wasn't a newcomer. But he liked what he heard in our rooms and he stayed. And I've done service with John, oh, for probably 18 months or longer. I'm useless at working out time. And it's a real pleasure to do it with him. He's got a good sense of humour. We have a laugh together. I think I've heard your story once before, John, and it was my idea, I think, which is probably why Steve's asking me to get you to share for us, because I know you celebrated an anniversary recently and you've got a fantastic attitude, which I really admire. I will just leave it there and hand it over to John. Please share with us. Thank you, John. I mean, thank you, Steve, and everybody.
Thanks, Christine.
Thank you, Christine. I'm
Hey,
John. I'm an ad.
Christine. Hi, John.
Hi,
Hi,
John.
John.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, I celebrated 19 years 2 weeks ago, and no, I'm not exactly a God kind of person, but I was thinking, and I've thought about it before, of this idea of mercy, and why did I get spared from active addiction? Why was I able to get clean and other people aren't? I feel very fortunate. I don't feel like it's my doing. I feel like what's kept me clean more than anything is surrender. Surrendering to allowing people to help me. Surrendering resentments. Surrendering the desire to use first and foremost. And that surrender came from, really came from years of relapse, about 6 years of relapse. I was clean for a year, mostly in the other program. And after I relapsed, I was in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And when I got clean the last time, I started to recognize the things that had kept me from staying in recovery. Kind of these barricades that I put up, whether it was personalities or I'm smarter than the literature or this isn't going to work for me because I'm too screwed up, on sponsorship. There was a guy who was I was going to have as a sponsor, and he was younger than me, and he said some things jokingly that I didn't get, and it was hard to take guidance from somebody younger than me. Years later, he would become my sponsor, and we have a great relationship to this day, though he's no longer my sponsor. So I don't know. I started using at 13 years old. I had a paper route delivering newspapers on my bicycle, and the money that I made paid for alcohol on the weekends. And I used till I was 37 years old, used more and more and more and more, and all sorts of substances. I never said no to a substance. And my high school, there were a lot of drugs going through. And actually, before that, I had used with my siblings. My parents weren't alcoholics or addicts, but my siblings, we were all getting wasted together. And some of that was kind of inappropriate considering how young I was in the beginning. But in high school, I embarked on my own career with using, and I started using every day, every morning, before school. And I had a very damaged girlfriend who was very troubled, and we would just get wasted together. And I was kind of drawn to damaged people from a very young age. I thought that that they were kind of like these people who just breeze through life, and they don't really think about the seriousness of anything. They don't really have any genuine emotions, and I just don't understand, you know, suffering and difficulties. And I, you know, didn't realize it till years later. I was thinking about it the other day, but I just, I nurtured that idea over the years more and more and more. And eventually even the people I used with, I felt like they didn't understand either. So it got more and more to, you know, I was singled out somehow for suffering, for depression. And I felt a lot of times like my life was just an endurance test, getting through deep, deep depressions that would go on for months and increasingly isolated me. But, you know, the idea seems pretty silly now, but... you know, that I was somehow singled out and that somehow my suffering was worse than other people's. And, you know, every human being goes through all sorts of difficulties, you know, with relationships, with people dying, with their emotions. And it was kind of arrogant of me to think that I knew better and that I understood better and that I suffered more. But I ended up in a psych ward at 19 years old. I was hearing voices, and I was very suicidal. And I think some of it was related to my use of hallucinogens. And some of it was, I guess, bipolar. That was the diagnosis I was given. And... shortly, I kind of segued right from the psych ward into college. It was a very last minute decision, and I had grown up in the suburbs, and I moved to the city and went to a very arty kind of college, and there was a lot of drugs, and there was a lot of very casual sex, and I managed to do very well in school, despite all that. And I was a creative writing and literature major. And I just ate up novels that were about pain. And I ate up biographical novels about people being in the Holocaust and Nagasaki and Hiroshima. And I went to a lot of really... depressing foreign films. There were all sorts of art house movie theaters, and you know, thought I was very sophisticated and again kind of understood things on a level that a lot of other people didn't. So it was an arty kind of school, so a lot of my friends were into a lot of the same stuff. And sorry, I keep pausing for so long. I have trouble with my train of thought at this point in my life. Okay, I remember in college one night, a bunch of us were out, and when the bars closed, we were drinking in the pubs, the bars. And when the bar closed, the night had kind of ended on a sour note, and I wanted it to keep going and have it get good again, and decided that we should steal a bottle of booze out of a liquor store window. That was my brilliant idea, and we did that, and we didn't get caught. But that was the first time I'd ever broken the law, and I was thinking about that today, thinking about how much stealing I did over the years. Actually, before that, I was stealing from a job that I had actually in high school, secondary school, whatever. And I got fired because of that. And then fast forward to college and the liquor store situation, and stealing alcohol was a recurring thing throughout my addiction. Didn't really start up again for many years, but you know, I got that first time I got clean, I was 37 years old. I stayed clean for about a year, and then I relapsed on and on over and over for like 6 years. So when I finally got clean this last time, which hopefully will be the last time I have to get clean, I was 44 years old. And I'd used for a total of 30 years. And sometimes I'm not always thrilled with where my life has ended up. I don't always feel happy, joyous, and free, though I do experience happiness and I do experience joy. But I often feel like, you know, I'm a survivor, and I have so much gratitude for that. And that word mercy comes in again, because I'm amazed that I'm free, that I've never been in jail or in prison. I've spent a lot of times in police stations, usually for stupid stuff, barroom fights and that kind of thing. But I was heading for trouble, without a doubt. And the first time I got clean, and pretty much every time I came back, there was either fear or a lot of pain. I was in a lot of emotional, spiritual pain, or both. And you know, I feel like I very narrowly escaped what I would regard as a fate worse than death. I do not think I would do well in jail. I'm very claustrophobic. I'm not comfortable around macho guys. And yeah, it would not be a good thing. And the other thing about getting clean when I did was that I was feeling increasingly that I might do something really extreme. I was, I don't like to talk too much about substances, but alcohol is where I started, and alcohol was a huge part of my using for 30 years. And I was increasingly blacking out in my 40s and before that, actually. But I was afraid about what I might be capable of doing in a blackout. Because, you know, all controls are off. It's kind of like consciousness is off. And sometimes I would come to in the middle of a blackout and wonder what the hell I was doing or where I was. And, you know, there were things I did that I would remember later that were cruel, and that I still feel badly about. So I'm very, very grateful that I was able to stop when I did. You know, a lot of addicts don't get to that point. A lot of addicts never get clean. We're all extremely fortunate. And I'm very aware of how fortunate I am, and grateful that I have the clarity now that, you know, I'm an addict. I'm a member of Narcotics Anonymous, and I can't use, and I don't want to use anyway. But, and of course, I could use. And I mean, all I have to do is, you know, go get some booze or call somebody from my past to get some drugs, And I could be off and running again, but I know it would be a disaster. And I just refused to go there. I lived like a crazy person for a long time. Why would I open that door again to all the drama and chaos and danger of active addiction? And one thing I learned in recovery was, you know, the idea of having choices. And that hadn't really occurred to me, you know, that was even a big thing. You know, like, again, I thought, you know, I was chosen to suffer or something. And, you know, recovery didn't, it didn't cure my mental health. It wasn't some magic thing, but I had the choice of how much drama I wanted to allow into my life and how much chaos. And, you know, when I got clean this last time, I called my sponsor every day. He would listen to where I was at, and if I was about to make a really stupid decision, he would just kind of point out that, you know, like, is that going to help you stay clean? Do you want to go back to that chaos? You know, I was thinking crazy things like, I'm going to get my ex-girlfriend clean, who's like using the way I use. Like, nobody wants a clean addict to come into their lives when they're active. And it was just an insane idea. I mean, our relationship ended terribly. I remember once I had lent somebody some money to get an apartment, and I thought he was trying to get clean. I don't know, it was foolish, but it was a few $100s. And I remember my sponsor telling, I was getting really angry about it, and calling this guy a lot and threatening him. And my sponsor was like, that's not recovery behavior. And he was like, let the money go. And I did. And that was a big turning point in my recovery. And there was another instance where somebody from my past who I got on really bad terms with, some circumstances of and his behavior. And I ran into him on the street, and he was drunk, and he was trying to get all friendly with me and like hug me and all this stuff. And I was really, really angry. And I wanted to punch him, quite frankly. And just somehow I knew that wasn't recovery behavior. And a bar where I used to drink was right around the corner from where this was happening. And like, somehow I recognized that, like, if I engage in that kind of behavior, I'm going to end up there probably right away. And, you know, I walked away from that situation. And I remember like kind of being in tears to like feel all that anger and not use and not act out. It was just overwhelming. And I had that feeling at other times, whether it was anger. Usually it was anger, or it was just an intense desire to go back to using. And, you know, started to have the experience of really wanting to use and not using. Very fundamental part of recovery, one would think, but took me a very long time to get there. And I remember at about like 4 years clean or so, we were reading the literature. I forget exactly how it's put, but it's basically, you know, if you don't pick up, you won't get high. And I was like, suddenly like, oh, that's what that means. It was like, seemed like a revelation, you know. But yeah, I was working for a guy in my first year of recovery this time. And he was an addict. He wasn't into substances, but he had other addictions, and he was a very angry person. And you know, I was making really good money, and I was reluctant to leave the job, but I knew it was unhealthy. And by that time, I had ended relations with all the active addicts that I knew, including a friend of decades who was a vagabond, a ski bum. He was all over the place, but he called me. And our relationship was always weird. And he was very, very passive aggressive. But he called me and he's like, "How are you doing?" And there were these long pauses. And then he was like, "I can't believe you said this and that that night." And it was like some drunken night at like 3 a.m. in my apartment with another guy. And we're all wasted. And he was kind of betraying confidences, trying to make me feel bad. Him and this other guy were kind of ganging up on me, and I just blurted out something about him. And, you know, it was all very stupid. But when I was on the phone with him years later, I was like, man, that was like a year ago or 2 years ago. And when I got off the phone with him, I realized it was like 5 years ago or something. And I was just like, that's crazy to still be obsessing about that. And I was at a meeting talking about all these active addicts. Some of them were calling me, and I would tell them I got clean, and they would argue with me about whether I was an addict or an alcoholic, even though they'd done drugs with me many, many times. And they would debate with me about, you know, whether NA was a bunch of self-righteous assholes or not. And, you know, it was just crazy to be having these debates. You know, I was debating about what I was doing to save my life. And I was at a meeting talking about, you know, all these people from my past and calling me and this and that. And somebody suggested that I get an unlisted phone number, and I was like, that's kind of extreme. And I drove around the corner after the meeting, and I was like, that's a really good idea. And that was, you know, one of my first experiences with honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. You know, I was able to recognize, like, honestly, is that a bad idea? And then, you know, that honesty led me to be open-minded enough to consider what the person had said. And then I found the willingness. And, you know, it was after I did that. And there were a few people on cell phones at the time. I didn't. So I just got an unpublished phone number. And, you know, I realized as time went on that, you know, there was no good that was going to come from me talking to active addicts. It just was not a good situation. And my place used to be where a lot of addicts came after hours. And gradually those people stopped showing up. A lot of people used to show up unexpectedly. And, you know, we'd drink and do drugs till dawn. And, after a while, it was like I was no fun anymore. And, you know, those people didn't want to hang out with me. And that was all good because things got clearer. And one of the reasons that I'd relapse often was because I'd feel really isolated. And the bar rooms were, that's where my community was, I thought. So the last time I got clean, I had to start connecting with people in the program and do stuff outside of the rooms. And I'd never really been willing to do that. And I felt, you know, I was so used to like talking for hours and staying up all night that I would go to meetings. And then I'd be like, well, you know, everybody's nice here, but then everybody just goes off after the meeting. And I realized years later that like I had been invited to do stuff I just thought it was lame or something, or I didn't feel comfortable. It was hard for me to socialize without being high. But I started accepting those invitations because I started to understand that, like, if I don't interact with anybody, I'm going to go back to the bars. And, you know, I discovered the bars in college, and I used to call it Bar World because it was like a different reality. And when I was in the city, there was a bar that, like, the door swung out onto the sidewalk, and a very busy sidewalk on a busy street. And you would step from a bright sunny day into that place, and it was really dark. And it was like it was a Saturday night, and it was 2 in the afternoon on a Tuesday or whatever. And I really loved that atmosphere. I don't know. And I was a chameleon, you know, could kind of hide at the same time. I could be somebody else. And I didn't recognize, like, there was a lot of really depressing elements to that world, you know. But I can remember seeing people like, oh, you know, he's always in a good mood, and he's doing fine. And, you know, years later, realizing he had a wife and children waiting at home for him. And, you know, he was drinking every single night in the bar from the time he got out of work till he was going to pass out, you know. And that's not like the fun barroom situation. But anyway, this guy I was working for, I was reluctant to leave the job because I was making good money. And, you know, I talked to my sponsor and I talked to other addicts about it. And, you know, I had this irrational fear of becoming homeless, and, you know, I shouldn't give up that kind of money, da 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 da. And everybody from NA that I talked to, none of them told me what to do, but I remember one person in particular said, like, you know, if you do decide to leave that job, think of it as a leap of faith. And that's what I did. And it was a really great thing. I didn't have any conflict going on in my life for the most part. And I'd had a lot of conflict with that guy. So yeah, I did a lot of things in my first year of recovery that I'd never done in my prior attempts. And that helped a lot. And again, it was that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And a lot of times the honesty was about the open-mindedness. It was just like, am I being open-minded? You know, that's kind of closed-minded. Maybe I need to be open-minded. And, you know, eventually I didn't have to question it. I was just open to the help. And I remember saying to somebody years later that there's all kinds of help available in NA, all different types of help. People in the program, the literature, the steps. It's just all this help if you open yourself up to it. And took me a long time to do that. I think part of it was I felt very vulnerable. I just couldn't, like, give myself over to this idea of, I don't know, truly accepting the program as, I don't know, as a life, a way of living, I should say, instead of the way I had been living. And I had like 6 psych ward visits in my life. And the last time I was 3 years clean, and So that's 16 years ago. I haven't had the need to go back to a psych ward in 16 years, which is incredible, considering my history. I have a lot of peace of mind these days. I do experience happiness. I do experience joy. Not every day by any means. You know, in these 19 years, I haven't committed any crimes. I realized after I was clean a while that my behavior at times in recovery was very cruel and sometimes violent. And there were a lot of instances of that that I had buried that didn't come off for a long time, even years after I got clean. And, you know, I haven't been cruel to anybody. I haven't been violent towards anybody in 19 years. And I'm so grateful for that. I don't know. I think that's really about all I've got. I found the Highlands and Islands group at the beginning of COVID. Christine did ask me to share the first time. I think this is the third year I've celebrated since I got to the Highlands and Islands group. And I'm really grateful for all of you, for everyone in Hagna. And I feel very, very comfortable here, very safe here. I don't feel judged. And I've grown really fond of the people that are here regularly. And I'm just going to leave it there. Thank you. Hope I made some sense.